A very good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On The Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. I'm your host, Dafa Happy Juju, and today is Tuesday, the 21st of April, 2026. Now, this Tuesday, it is about setting the pace. Tuesday is where intent meets attraction across the country, from Swakopmund to Rundu, Chuarongo to Rudrut, Katimamulilo to Khobabas. The conversations that begin the week are already being tested against reality. Plans are no longer just ideas on paper. They are being measured in action, in output, and in early signs of impact. Now today we shift focus to execution under pressure. How are institutions responding once the spotlight moves beyond announcement? Are strategies translating into delivery? What matters most in communities, in businesses, and in the daily lives of Namibians? We'll take a closer look at Namibia's evolving economic direction, including the push toward green industrialization, investment readiness, and how the country is positioning itself within a competitive global landscape. As opportunity expands, so do expectations, and the margin for delay continues to shrink. Younger Namibians remain at the center of this transformation from entrepreneurship to digital innovation. Their role is no longer emerging, it's defining. Now the question now is not whether youth will shape the future, but whether systems are adapting fast enough to support their momentum. We also examine governance in motion, not just policy intention, but a policy performance as decisions move from cabinet rooms into implementation. The focus tends to accountability, efficiency, and measurable outcomes where progress is visible. Where gaps remain, we ask why. Now, beyond the headlines, we stay connected to the lived experiences where national strategy meets everyday reality, because ultimately, the strength of any plan is reflected in how it lands on the ground. Now, over the next 1 hour and 20 minutes, we expect perspective that challenges, analyze, that informs, and conversation that do matter right here on The Reading News Analysis, where we don't just follow the story, we unpack its impact. Now let's get right into today's analysis. Namibia has appointed a new National Governing Council, also abbreviated as NGC, for the African Peer Review Mechanism, marking a renewed commitment to strengthening governance, accountability, and development planning. The appointment was formalized during a ceremony at the State House where President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah met the newly selected council members. The body represents Namibia's third NGC since joining the APRM framework, that is the African Peer Review Mechanism framework. Now, the council is chaired by former Ambassador Wilfred Mvula and includes a fellow former Ambassador Elia Kayamo alongside members Betty Skroda, Isao Kakunga, Rosita Nawases, Naita Haishongo, Rosemary Nalis, and Uhuru Dempres, also Salomon Hay. But nonetheless, let's pause here for a scheduled commercial break.
Get more for less at Voerman Brock. Like a 2 kg bag of nice rice for just $32.99. 100 g Nescafe Rick Coffee, now only $29.99. A 2 L Coca-Cola for a sweet $21.99. And 2 kg Surf hand wash powder, now just $49.99. See more mid-month deals at voermanbrock.com. We care.
Okay, let's get right into our news. Among the appointees is also Hakusembe, and Rosemary Nalisa. Now, the ARP was established in 2023. That is the Africa Peer Review Mechanism. Was established in 2003, under the African Union as a voluntary self-assessment tool. The countries that join agree to periodically evaluate their performance in 4 key areas. 1, democracy and political governance, economic governance and management, corporate governance, socio-economic development. Now, the process is not imposed externally. Instead, it is a peer-driven, meaning African countries review one another's governance practices and share recommendations. Namibia has been a participating member for years and has previously undergone reviews, producing national programs of action to address governance gaps. Now, the National Governing Council serves as the independent national focal structure for the Africa peer review process, and its core responsibility include overseeing national assessment, coordinating inclusive reviews of Namibia's governance across political, economic and social sectors, stakeholder engagement, bringing together government, civil society, academia and the private sector to ensure broader participation, monitoring implementation, that is tracking progress on reforms outlined in Namibia's national program of action, reporting and liaison, acting as the link between Namibia and the Continental Africa Peer Review Mechanism Secretariat, ensuring timely submission of reports, as well as promoting transparency by encouraging public dialogue on governance challenges and reform priorities. Now, the reconstruction of the council comes at a time when Namibia, like many African nations, is seeking to reinforce institutional integrity and accelerate development outcomes. By appointing experienced diplomats and professionals, the government signals an emphasis on credibility and continuity in the review process. Now, the APRM process is widely seen as a tool for implementing governance crisis, identifying risks early and aligning national policies with continental standards. Namibia's renewed engagement is expected to support policy reforms, enhance investor confidence, and strengthen democratic institutions. Now, one of the appointees, among the appointees, is economist Salomon Hay. And let's now pause here so we get hold of him and get his contributions on this appointment, and also what the Africa Peer Review in general tends to look at, and whether there has been tangible outcomes in the past.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebi to danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwa tafanona monika ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora itatu natu.
Welcome back. And of course, joining me in studio now telephonically is economist Salomon Hay. A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Salomon, and welcome to On the Real News Analysis.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and good afternoon to your listeners.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Salomon, a big congratulations to your appointment to the African Peer Review Mechanism. Let's start off with you being an economist and coming on board to review, of course, other countries and representing Namibia. How does this appointment? How did it come off? And what you being an economist yourself? What do you think about an economist being on board also to review the economic and social challenges that faces many countries?
Yeah, thank you so much, and thank you for the kind words. So, remember, there was the Africa Peer Review Mechanism was established, I think, around 2003 mm-hmm. by the heads of states, and the APRM is a voluntary mechanism amongst African states, and it aims to sort of assess and review governance at the peer level for the different head of states and governments. Now, as part of this ongoing work, I think back 2 or 3 years ago, I had the privilege of being the lead consultant.
Mm-hmm.
A paper that looked at the viability of an Africa accreditating agency, which now has come to fruition. So that particular work was looking at wanting to understand whether the credit rating assessments of African countries by rating agencies like the Fitch and the Standard & Poor and Moody's, are they fair to the African credit rating assessments? That was precisely to want to bring about a level of fairness.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't to bring about to be a competitor, if it were, but rather to complement some of the work that the current credit rating agencies are carrying out. So at the conclusion of that particular work, obviously it had to go through the same process in terms of the Africa peer review processes, which means that it had to go again to the head of states at the highest level, at the governance level, to be able to assess whether there is viability. Now, that process is ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
The Africa peer review mechanism will definitely be looking at setting up an Africa credit rating agency to complement the work that's being done by the other rating agencies globally.
Okay.
Now, for an economist to form part of that work is because the governance that needs to come through, whether it's general corporate governance, whether it's economic governance, they need to be informed by data. We need to be able to find solutions around data. And as part of our ongoing work, it means that having an APRM general council member, having a background in economics, it goes a long way in making sure that the solutions around the peer-reviewed and targeted interventions carry weight around the strength of a discipline. So it's with that in mind that I then, one, came on board, but two, the value that one perhaps could add on the Africa peer review mechanism general council for Namibia.
Interesting. Now, in terms of the history over the years as the Africa peer review has, African peer review mechanism has been doing its work, obviously, with people, with those appointed are reviewing other governance of other countries and how they are assessing. What is it that you have perhaps come across that you've identified that you think perhaps Namibia will do well to implement? And also perhaps, what is it that you have identified that Namibia has been doing well already that you would definitely want the country to continue in that line?
Well, if you remember, not so long ago, Namibia carried out a country assessment through a targeted intervention of youth unemployment. Now, the Africa peer review mechanism, in terms of the Namibian chapter, doesn't only look at other countries. There's a huge component of it, or high concentration, within the domestic economy. So essentially what the Africa Peer Review Mechanism Governance Council does, it oversees this targeted intervention within the domestic economy. So the targeted intervention that was geared towards youth unemployment now need to be resolved with a program of action. So what that means is that once we have identified what the challenges are around youth unemployment for a country like Namibia, thereafter there needs to be a program of action that should lead into solutions for the high youth unemployment that Namibia has. So the work of the APRM is of such a nature that it only does not only locate the problem. What it also does is try and bring solutions and recommendations to the problem. So for a country like Namibia, that's battling youth unemployment, where a report has been carried out on the country around youth unemployment with targeted intervention, it would mean that the next phase of the work will be carried out. We then have to look at possible solutions around the challenges of youth unemployment. And essentially, this is the level of peer review work that countries have to carry out that have voluntarily ascended to the Africa peer review mechanism, because the economic challenges differ from countries to countries. And when they are pressing matters, I think it's critical that countries carry out work that can then bring about solutions to those problems that are embedded in those respective economies. So Namibia is no different from this, and this is why the targeted intervention around youth unemployment will now obviously have to follow the work of a program of action that will then mean that we would have to look at solutions that could potentially assist the country with the youth unemployment challenges that we are facing.
Mm-hmm. What's role that perhaps Namibians can play also in this African peer review mechanism? Is it perhaps a role that the public can also play to say maybe identify certain areas, or where do we come in?
Well, you come in as part of being the Namibian ecosystem. Remember that the solutions and the problems and the challenges that we are facing are not in isolation. It has got, it carries faces, it carries names, it carries regions, it carries towns, it carries cities, it carries schools, it carries universities and all of this. So the reality is that as part of the solution-oriented work and following the different themes and pillars under which the APRM stands on, there's a collective approach that's needed to be able to bring about the solutions. So there's definitely going to be views solicited from, for instance, the respective towns, the respective regions, the respective areas. If we speak about health intervention around the improvement of quality health care, it means that we would have to go to even the most remote of areas to understand what is quality service for the health care, because if you don't go to the most remote areas, surely your sample and the solution cannot only end with the urban areas. And that is why it's critically important that whatever gets done carries that very thorough understanding, so that everyone that's being targeted and where solutions are being sought are into account, their views are amplified, they are represented within the APRM final reports and targeted interventions and program of actions.
Interesting. Mr. Salamahi, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis. And of course, we wish you all the very best on a new appointment.
Thank you for having me. Thank you to you all.
Okay. There we had it from Salamahi, economist. Let's pause here now and make room for a scheduled commercial break. Don't go anywhere.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no, why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the mimo with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life you just get squeezed. But luckily with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. In other news, the mayor of Walvisby, that is Mr. Johannes Shimbilinga, has called for stronger collaboration between government, industry and development partners as Namibia advances plans to unlock major climate financing for green industrialization. Speaking at the CIF IDP TIP stakeholder engagement held at Protea Hotel Walvisby, Indongo Shimbilinga welcomed stakeholders from across sectors, emphasizing the strategic importance of coordinated investment planning to drive sustainable economic growth. The engagement forms part of Namibia's participation in the Climate Investment Fund, that is CIF Industry Decarbonization Program, that is IDP, under which the country is developing a strategic transformation investment plan, also known as STIP. Now, the plan is designed to identify priority projects that can accelerate low carbon industrial development while strengthening the country's readiness to absorb climate financing. In his opening remarks, Shimbilinga highlighted Walvisby's role as a logistics and industrial hub, positioning it as central to Namibia's green transition ambitions. He noted that aligning infrastructure, policy and private sector participation would be critical to ensuring that investment translates into tangible economic and environmental benefits. The STIP process is a prerequisite for accessing concessional funding under CIF programs. For Namibia, it could unlock up to $250 million in concessional finance that are aimed at supporting green industrialization initiatives such as renewable energy, powered manufacturing, reducing carbon emissions in key sectors, including mining, transport and logistics, enhancing climate resilience and sustainable infrastructure development. The plan also seeks to align with Namibia's broader climate commitments under the Paris Agreement, particularly its goals to reduce greenhouse emissions and expand renewable energy capacity. The Walvisby engagement brought together representatives from government ministries, local authorities, private industry and civil society. Discussions focused on identifying bankable projects, addressing policy and regulatory gaps, and ensuring that proposed investments deliver inclusive socio-economic benefits. Now, a support city and a gateway for regional trade, Walvisby is expected to play a key role in proposed green value chains, including hydrogen production, clean logistics, and export-orientated manufacturing. Namibia's STIP will be submitted to the Climate Investment Fund for review, after which selected projects may proceed to detailed design and financing stages. If approved, the funding could significantly accelerate the country's transition toward a low-carbon, climate-resilient economy. Shimbilinga concluded by urging stakeholders to maintain momentum, stressing that strategic partnerships and clear priorities will determine Namibia's access that will determine Namibia's success in securing and effectively deploying climate finance. Let's take a listen to Mr. Shimbilinga.
It is my honor to welcome you to Walvis Bay for this important stakeholders engagement session under the Climate Investment Fund. Your presence here reflects a shared commitment to shaping a resilient low-carbon future for our towns, our region, and our country. Specifically, Walvis Bay is a uniquely positioned at the center of Namibian industrial, logistic, and maritime economy. It is the country's primary port and a critical gateway to regional trade. This town plays a pivotal role enabling economic growth. At the same time, we recognize our responsibilities to contribute meaningfully to global and national climate goals by transitioning towards cleaner, more sustainable industrial practices. Today's program is structured to move us from dialogue to actions. Following these openings, we will engage in presentations that set the national context, outlining the CIF industry decarbonization program, the development of the strategic transformation investment plan, and Namibia's broader green industrial ambitions. Ladies and gentlemen, these inputs are critical as they frame the discussions that will take place in a technical and outbreak sessions that will follow. During those sessions, you will be expected to identify, to refine, and to prioritize potential projects, particularly those with strong decarbonization impact, scalability, and alignment to national priorities. The group discussions and sector-focused engagement are especially important. They provide the platform for stakeholders to contribute practical insights on project feasibility, implementation challenges, financing opportunities, and institutional coordination. The feedback captured from this session will directly inform the national's TIP pipeline. Allow me here to emphasize the strategic importance of aligning all these discussions with the Namibia Green Hydrogen Program. And Walvis Bay is expected also to play a critical role in this emerging sector, particularly in port infrastructures, in logistics, desalinations, and downstream industrial development. The ideas generated in today's session must therefore deliberately connect to this opportunity. As the program progresses towards report back and plenary discussions, I encourage each group to be clear, focused, and outcome-driven. The quality of the final presentation will determine how effectively Walvis Bay and Namibians' priorities are reflected in the national submissions. Before I conclude, allow me to highlight the expected outcome of this engagement, particularly in alignment with the NGH2P. This session is not merely consultative. It is intended to deliver concrete results. Firstly, we expect a clear identification and prioritization of higher impact projects emerging from today's breakout sessions, projects that can be incorporated into the CIF's and TIP pipeline. Secondly, we expect stronger alignment between this proposed project and the strategic objectives of the NGH2P, ensuring that our towns and cities contribute meaningfully to Namibia's ambitions to become a global leader in green hydrogen product and export. Thirdly, this engagement should produce actionable inputs on implementation ranging from policy and regulatory requirement to infrastructure needs, financing mechanisms, and institutional coordinations. Fourthly, we expect strengthened collaborations among stakeholders present here today, particularly as reflected in the plenary feedback and discussions.
Okay, let's pause here now and we'll be back to give more context on this news. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa eva tero ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite okoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala. Konongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamoyiri nawa. Ninge fata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala. Konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano.
One of the most important aspects of this initiative is the emphasis on collaboration. Chimbilinga's call for stronger alignment between government, industry and development partners addresses a common bottleneck in developing economies. Fragmentation, when ministries, municipalities and private companies operate in silos, projects stall, duplication occurs and investors lose confidence. Now, a coordinated framework ensures that infrastructure development, regulatory reforms and financing mechanisms move in sync or in synchronomy ways. Now, this reduces risks for investors and accelerates implementation rather. The focus on green industrialization is equally significant. Namibia has long relied on extractive industries and primary exports, which are vulnerable to global price fluctuations. Transitioning toward low-carbon industries such as green hydrogen, renewable energy processing, and sustainable logistics creates opportunities for value addition within the country. Instead of exporting raw materials, Namibia can build industries that process, manufacture and innovate domestically, generating higher skilled jobs and more resilient economic growth. Faber's base role in this vision cannot be overstated, as Namibia's primary port and a key logistic corridor into southern Africa, the city is uniquely positioned to become a gateway for green trade, investments in port infrastructure, clean energy supply and low emission transport systems could transform Walvis Bay into a regional hub for exporting green products and importing climate friendly technologies. Now, this aligns local development priorities with national and even continental ambitions under the frameworks like the African Continental Free Trade Area. Another critical dimension is climate finance readiness. Accessing international climate funds is not automatic. It requires strong institutional capacity, clear project pipelines, and robust governance systems. The STIP process helps Namibia build exactly these capabilities by identifying priority projects and aligning them with funding criteria. The country improves its ability to absorb and effectively utilize financing, and this reduces the risk of funds going unused or being misallocated, a challenge that has affected many countries in similar programs. Now, this is an important environmental and social angle. Namibia is one of the most climate vulnerable countries in Southern Africa, facing increasingly risks from droughts, water scarcity and ecosystem degradation. Investing in low carbon industries, therefore, is not just about reducing emissions. It is about building resilience, projects that integrate renewable energy, efficient water use and sustainable land management that can help protect livelihoods while supporting economic expansion. Equally, the transition must be inclusive. Stakeholder engagements like this are essential because they bring together voices from local government, from businesses and development partners. And this ensures that investments do not remain abstract policy goals, but translate into real benefits, into jobs, into infrastructure and improved living standards for communities in places like Walvis Bay and beyond. And also the broader geopolitical context make this initiative even more important as global supply chains shift towards sustainability. Countries that fail to decarbonize risk facing trade barriers such as carbon border taxes. Now, by proactively investing in green industries, Namibia is not just adopting, it is positioning itself as a competitive player in future markets. In essence, this engagement and the STIP process represents a strategic pivotal point. It is about moving from reactive development to proactive economic transformation, leveraging climate finance not only to meet environmental goals, but to reshape Namibia's industrial base, strengthen its global competitiveness, and secure a more sustainable and inclusive future. With that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Please stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipuranenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
In our full news, beyond the borders of Namibia, let's start off regionally, move over to continental news. Thereafter, you can expect some international news. And let's start off in South Africa on Masemola, who is in court over Medicare 24 contract saga. Let's take a listen to that.
We are outside the Pretoria Magistrate Court. That is where we are expecting General Fanny Masemola, the National Police Commissioner, to appear in this very same court. But what I need to tell our viewers is that General Masemola is inside this court now. He did pass through and went inside. He greeted the members of the media wearing a brown suit. He seemed calm, Mfundo, and when we tried to speak to him, unfortunately, he could not speak to the media. Remember, he is represented legally. So what I can tell the viewers is that he is inside, and our colleague, Offences Timo, and our video journalist Thabo, they are inside monitoring the proceedings. But let me answer your question. Remember when General Masemola was in Durban 2 or 3 weeks ago, when he went to officially renew the contract of the provincial commissioner in that province, Lieutenant General Dlatla Mkhwanazi, he spoke to the media about this issue, saying that no, I did not do anything wrong, and I will make sure that I abide by the rules of the law. But now we are lucky to have the spokesperson from the South African Police Service, Brigadier Atlenda Mate, who will be able to elaborate more, maybe answer some of your questions, Mfundo. Brigadier Mate, thank you very much for your time and your prompt response. Now, the 21st of April is today. Your principal got in here, and he seemed calm to say, and he greeted everyone. And now you can tell us, is he ready for this trial? And just for our viewers' sake, how did he find himself here?
Well, a very good morning, and thank you for the opportunity. The day has finally arrived, where General Fanny Masemola will get an opportunity to present himself before court. Today marks a defining moment, not only for the National Commissioner, but also for the SAPS. The mere fact that you have the National Commissioner appearing in court on allegations of contravention of the PFMA Act, it is a moment of truth. You know, it is a test to our institutional integrity, our commitment to accountability, and our unwavering respect for the rule of law. As an organization, we've always maintained that no one is above the law, irrespective of status, rank, position. And the mere fact that the National Commissioner has submitted himself and he has availed himself and he is appearing, it simply tells us that he's got respect and integrity for the office that he serves. So it is really a moment of
If you lost your show, all of Tali Kutungupo, Omawa O Tomono, Okutako NHP, Genge wa longi fire longi for Lili Pedulo Wawo Haku, Olo Hali Piti kwa efikune fiku, Mefiloshi Shelo Haku, Owa Washimali Wawo Shosha Kupako, Washika wet girl wa kom to Alan Lako Kashi, Koma Punglo and Ashano in Jolawelewe, Otodulo Kulongi fa Omawa, Wa Hupuko, Opona Miti Toshiningi Momikalo di Hapungashi, Okufutila po oi mali wa ishona oyo hodulu okupolwa ulifutila ove mwene omaya kulo olu hapu hakala ina kwa telwa mowa we kwa folo elu unamiti ile otodulu no kuli okupitifapo e mwedi donumba tokala ino futa ea kulolo elu unamiti kuyalele uhapu talela po nhp.com.na ema ngono malandola fwana ododi na okulandulwa NHP rooted in care for you.
Your life.
your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
SAPS, and it is a moment where we can't be defensive. We have to be honest. We have to reflect on what has happened and be honest with ourselves to say where systems are weak, how do we go forward and fix? Where there are challenges, organizational failures, how do we then rebuild? Where public trust has been eroded, how do we then, you know, build that public trust and confidence? How do we win it back from the communities that we serve? And it is only through consistent and ethical conduct amongst our members. So it is a moment of truth, like I've said, for the SAPS and not only for the National Commissioner, because it is a moment where we have to be honest with ourselves to say, let us interrogate our challenges as an organization. Let us identify the shortcomings and let us then move forward. Let us have a forward-looking perspective so that really we must fix whatever is wrong.
Thank you very much. That was Brigadier Atlenda Mate. As I have mentioned, that she speaks for subs. Brigadier Mate, they are saying that maybe we can continue with our conversations. Now, we apologize about that. Now you can tell us about his name now being mentioned in that. In Mpumalanga, the suspended provincial commissioner holding a media briefing, also talking about alleged corrupt activities that have been taking place in that province and the involvement, alleged involvement of your principal.
Look, the allegations made by Lieutenant General Manamela are quite serious, and like I've indicated previously, they shouldn't be taken lightly. But the president of this country, because he's a listening president, established a platform, a critical tool to uncover truths, to fix the country and law enforcement as a whole, which is the Madlanga Commission of Inquiry. We also had the ad hoc committee that sat. Those platforms, they have been established by the president so that those that have proof of wrongdoing, those that have proof of gross misconduct or any other evidence of wrongdoing in other law enforcement or in the country as a whole must come forward and provide that evidence. And they will be then given an opportunity to ventilate before the commission and provide that proof. So it is our wish that Lieutenant General Manamela would have utilized that platform, just like the former acting National Commissioner, Lieutenant General Pathlani, also used that platform by appearing before the ad hoc committee. And we also had Lieutenant General Vuma, who also used that same platform. So it was our wish that she could have also utilized that same platform. But like I've indicated, there are very serious allegations. She mentions high-profile cases. We cannot just ignore them. We have to investigate. We have to get to the bottom of the truth. We have to uncover the truth as to are those allegations true or not. But we should also not forget that the general as well is on suspension on very serious allegations, and she's yet to appear before a board of inquiry to assess her fitness to hold office.
Thank you very much. Well, as I have mentioned, that was Brigadier Atlenda Mate. She speaks for SAPS, and you could hear saying that this is the moment of truth, especially from General Fanny Masimula, the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service. Earlier, I did mention that I saw him getting inside this court, and I can confirm now and to our viewers at home that he is being represented by Legal Eagle in the name of Mr. Balonson, and now we are told that he is getting inside, and he is being informed about what is taking place inside, and then we'll be able to talk to his legal representative when we get out of when they get out of this court. And IDEC is also here, and we are told that IDEC will also engage with SABC News about what has transpired in court. Even Atlenda Mate will be able to talk to SABC News about what is happening.
Meanwhile, in other news, a call for African-led initiatives to solve or to resolve conflicts.
Africa! Music fitting the occasion filled the air in Dakar, Senegal. A nation long regarded as a model of political stability and democratic resilience, participants at the Peace and Security Forum called for renewed commitment to lasting peace across Africa.
Our continent should clearly reaffirm its sovereignty. We should no longer accept that our security agenda is defined elsewhere. Our priorities dictated by foreign interest. And our strategic space should be occupied without our consent. Sovereignty is also and above all an internal reality. It should be strategic, economic, but nowadays it should also be digital.
He also outlined what he believes should be the priorities.
I think currently to this child of the Sahel who did not go to school because the roads can't be crossed. I look of this Lake Chad Basin women who lost everything because of war. I think about that young in the Horn of Africa who could not find a job and that had been recruited by a criminal network, lack of future. These are not statistics. These are realities.
President Julius Maada Bio spoke candidly about the responsibility of leadership in times of conflict.
I have watched a country choose slowly and painfully to believe in itself. What I learned from this experience, from that experience, is something no security doctrine taught me in my whole life. You cannot impose peace on a people who have lost faith in the state.
He also warned against marginalization of young people and women. He touched on the global challenges that are currently affecting the continent. He says it is important for the issue of Sahel region to be attended to. The president of Sierra Leone says Sahel nations that withdrew from ECOWAS following military coups should be supported in efforts to rejoin the regional bloc.
So, Fimo Kweina, SABC News, Dakar, Senegal.
Meanwhile, South Africa's breakthrough device could transform TB detection as researchers at the University of Pretoria have developed a handheld device that could revolutionize tuberculosis testing.
TB remains one of the world's deadliest infectious diseases. In 2024, it killed over 1.2 million people worldwide. Early detection is critical to treatment and limiting transmission. Yet the same slow testing method has been used for over 100 years.
And what that typically entails is a patient coughing up a lung mucus or a sputum sample. And then that has to go be transported to a lab. And then that gets decontaminated in a biosafety level lab. And then that would typically either go for culture or into a nucleic acid-based assay. And that can take anywhere from a few days to 6 weeks to give a result.
Researchers at the University of Pretoria have found a simpler alternative using just a single drop of blood with a mycolate antibody real-time immunoassay or MARTI portable device.
You don't have to cough up this infectious sample because you're literally putting bacterial particles into the air when a patient has to cough up. So you put the other patients at risk, you put the healthcare workers at risk. In the blood sample, we look for an antibody. It's really interesting because the antibody indicates that your immune system is busy fighting an active infection.
MARTI removes the need for lab processing, delivering results during a single doctor's visit.
This is the handheld device. It fits in the palm of your hand. You would simply switch it on and remove the cartridge from its packaging. Insert the cartridge into the slot in the device that does the first activation. Do the second activation, then you prick your finger, touch to the cartridge, and it will give you results in 30 minutes.
The breakthrough could be a game changer for South Africa, which carries one of the world's highest TB burdens, with over 50,000 deaths in 2024 alone.
20% of people die undiagnosed of TB while they were still living, and that is what needs to be curtailed. So this can now go out, and you can do a campaign in order to determine the hotspots of TB infection in South Africa. We know that they are in prisons and that they are in the mines where people need to be routinely surveyed for the presence of tuberculosis.
Beyond the health crisis, TB carries a heavy economic toll, costing billions in lost productivity and household income, underscoring the urgency of containing the disease. Marty could support the World Health Organization's global target to cut the number of cases and deaths by at least 80% by the end of the decade, but regulatory approvals and clinical trials are still required. While the device offers real hope, it may take years before it is rolled out across hospitals and clinics in South Africa. Julie Shara, CHTN, Cape Town.
Meanwhile, Namibia hails China's zero tariff policy. That is after Minister Selma Ashipala Musavi wrapped up an 8-day official visit to China.
Namibia's Minister of International Relations and Trade has concluded an 8-day official visit to China. In an interview with CGTN, Selma Ashipala Musavi expressed gratitude for Beijing's zero tariff policy under the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation. She says the policy presents significant opportunities for Namibia's value-added production in cross-border port trade.
Starting May the 1st of this year, China is going to implement zero tariff treatment to all 53 African countries with diplomatic ties.
Yes.
Of course, Namibia included.
Yeah.
So what opportunities do you see when it comes to Namibia's exports and when it comes to value addition, as you just highlighted?
Mm. You know, first I need to express Namibia's thanks and appreciation to the government of the People's Republic of China, because I think the gesture from China to extend a zero tariff measure regime to African countries is a direct product of the Forum of China-Africa Cooperation, FOCAC. So we are very happy about that, and we welcome that. How Namibia and other African countries, but let me confine this to Namibia, is going to benefit is manifold. First, it will build confidence between our two countries and also our two private sectors, because non-tariff measures are a confidence-building measure. Number two, I think it will generate industrialization and optimize it and enhance it in order for us to gain more access to the Chinese market. I think it will accelerate the industrialization process in our country and also Africa in general. For Namibia, we are a coastal state. All of our neighbors who do not have access to the sea depends on our port. So it means more businesses for the Walvis Bay port, because the cargo has to go through our port. And I think it will be really a way of what Africa has been talking when we say the Africa we want. Yes, we are in doubt with resources, but we do not want to remain a source of raw materials. We want to add value to our products, being it minerals or agricultural, so that we can become more relevant to the Chinese economy, but also to the global economy. So we are looking at it from that perspective, and I think it's a very welcome measure.
Meanwhile, in other news, Kenyan schools expand opportunities for students with Chinese lessons.
As ties between Nairobi and Beijing deepen, Chinese language learning is gaining momentum across the country.
What about if I have 9:40? What would be the time?
GODN.
GODN.
In Nairobi's Mukuru Kayaba, a budding education center based at the Burden Sharing Primary and Secondary School Center is equipping children with Mandarin skills, preparing them for a rapidly shifting job market. A love for the Chinese language is blossoming at the most unlikely of places here in Mukuru Kayaba, Nairobi, Kenya. This is not just about picking up a foreign language for some of these students, it's also about opening up future opportunities in business, cultural exchange, and education. And the teachers here tell us enthusiasm has been remarkable. While challenging at first, the children soon get the hang of the language, with moments in these classrooms separating them from harsh realities back home. Most of these students hope to become translators or teachers themselves.
My first time in Chinese, it was a little bit challenging. It was hard. Sometimes I used to skip lessons, but for now, I can't even skip any lesson at all. As per me, I can do anything. I can be a translator or I can be a teacher.
If you've reached not a very high level, for example, level 3, you can be able to get a scholarship for your bachelor's in China. The other benefit of learning Chinese is you're able to get translation jobs and also interpretation jobs at various Chinese companies in our country.
The China Mashinani program collaborates with the Chinese Language Teachers Association of Kenya, which sends volunteer tutors to work with the learners. And so far, hundreds of local children have found their way into the job market after learning the Chinese language.
We have like 200 students from Form 4 that have gotten to the labor force, and they have been employed within industries that are handling products from China. Also, we thank Discovery Culture and the Chinese Training Institution, because they are the people who have been sending us volunteers to come and train our children here.
The deputy chair of the Chinese Language Teachers Association of Kenya says learning the language years back expanded his horizons, connecting him to new cultures and professional networks.
Look at the way of delivering the education system. So we want to borrow from this. And now, because we are borrowing from this kind of thing, we also have to set our minds to that kind of developing economy. So teaching and learning Chinese language will only help us to gain more opportunities. One, we have also scholarships. Things like scholarships, China is offering so many scholarships to Kenya.
At the BDS Center, there are plans to expand with support from the Chinese community so as to bring these lessons to even more learners, opening doors to a brighter future. Trix Ingado, CGTN.
New era for Apple as names new boss to replace Tim Cook after 15 years.
Now let's talk about Apple. It has announced its chief executive Tim Cook is stepping down in September after 15 years in the top job. He'll be replaced by John Ternus, who is currently president of hardware, engineering and oversees all of Apple's physical products like the iPhone and the iPad. Mr. Cook will become the executive chairman of the company's board. He said leading Apple has been the greatest privilege of his life. Lily Jamali has more details.
Tim Cook has held the top job at Apple since 2011 when legendary co-founder Steve Jobs stepped down due to health reasons.
A huge day for Apple.
And Tim Cook has always been seen as a steady hand, somebody who helped remake Apple's supply chain to center much of it in China. Since he's been at the helm, the company has released the Apple Watch and AirPods. They have moved more deeply into services, but there also have been some notable flops, including the Apple Vision Pro, which never quite took off. Still, since Cook has been CEO, The company has gone from a $350 billion market cap to a $4 trillion market cap. So it is one of the most important companies easily in Silicon Valley. He has also successfully navigated two administrations of U.S. President Donald Trump, navigating Trump's tariff wars and geopolitical tensions between the U.S. and China. That has actually drawn some criticism from people who say that Tim Cook has been too cozy with the current U.S. president.
The new MacBook Pro is...
John Ternus, on the other hand, is a new face to many people outside of Apple, but he's actually spent about half of his life at the company. He's currently the senior vice president for hardware engineering, and when you think of Apple, you think of hardware. He has been instrumental in the company's telling of things in the release of products like the iPad and AirPods. He has also been there for new generations of the iPhone, which is, of course, Apple's most important product. The question is, will John Ternus make big, bold decisions? And can he help Apple introduce that next blockbuster product that will make the company as culturally relevant as it once was?
Well, let's unpack that with Sunaina Sinha Haldeya, who's Global Head of Private Capital Advisory at Raymond James. Morning, Sunaina. I do remember when Tim Cook took over from Steve Jobs, and you just think, man, those are huge shoes to fill. And I would say for John Ternus, it's a similar scenario, would you?
Indeed, he does have gigantic shoes to fill. There's not that many CEOs that can almost 10 times, 11 times the valuation of a $350 billion company that he inherited from a legendary founder like Steve Jobs. But that's what Tim Cook did. And you're looking at one of the most valuable public companies on the planet in Apple. But John has a huge task ahead of him, which is the pivot to AI. Apple has been said to have been left behind in this AI reinvention of tech companies. And it's done this major deal with Google's Gemini now. And it's up to John to roll that out and stay ahead of the zeitgeist when it comes to AI.
And how do you do that when you're the CEO of such an enormous company? I mean, Lily was just pointing out what that does involve, which includes geopolitics. I mean, Tim Cook was criticized to a degree for being cozy with President Trump, but isn't that true with all the tech bros? It's kind of the way they've had to be.
Indeed, because they're so influential that that influence gets them unique access, and they're able to use that access to, of course, advance their own company's agendas, but also to be able to influence policy. And that's what they all have the opportunity to do. The question is, how do they use that opportunity and that access that's given to them by the influence of their products? And John will have that and more. But the world in tech is changing so fast. Apple has done an incredible job under Tim Cook of making it part of all of our zeitgeists, from products to content to subscription to wearables. It's part of our healthcare routines in for many people who use the Apple Watch and so on. So the question for John is, how does he continue to maintain that market share, but also stay up with all the AI invention that's happening and the move towards being smarter and more intelligent in those products? That is a huge task, but given that he's been at the forefront of that innovation at Apple for most of his career, I think he sounds like the Apple board is convinced that he's up for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, succession is so important, successful transition from one CEO to another. And Apple have done this with Tim Cook already, and I'm guessing that they have been preparing for this for quite some time. I mean, he's been known as the man, John Ternus, that will be taking over for a little while.
Indeed. And I think all boards do a slow and methodical succession, that want that succession to be successful. And that's what Apple's chosen to do. Tim Cook isn't going anywhere. He's stepping into an exec chair role. Exec chair, by definition, means incredibly active in that role for a period of time before he hands the reins completely over. So it is a gradual, very thoughtful succession at Apple.
Sunaina, thanks for your time. We'll see you again soon. Sunaina Sinha Haldeya there from Raymond James.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump says extension of Iran ceasefire is highly unlikely. It comes to an end on Wednesday.
President Trump says a potential deal with Iran would be, quote, far better than former President Obama's 2015 agreement. But there's a catch. He needs to get Tehran back to the negotiating table. Today, in an interview with Bloomberg, Trump said it's highly unlikely that he would extend the truce with Iran before it expires on Wednesday evening. Sources tell CNN Vice President J.D. Vance is set to travel to Pakistan for a second round of peace talks, but Tehran says it has no plans to participate. In fact, the regime is vowing retaliation after American forces fired on and seized an Iranian-flagged cargo ship known as the Tosca after it tried to bypass the U.S. blockade. U.S. Central Command sharing this video you see here of yesterday's operation, which shows U.S. Marines on helicopters rappelling down and boarding the ship. CNN's Nick Robertson is live for us from Islamabad in Pakistan. Nick, it is unclear if this new round of talks is actually even going to happen. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I think at the moment the struggle to get the Iranians to commit to come to the table is going to be about as big an effort as it will be then should they get to the table to try to bring agreement around the table. I think there's real hope, certainly from the mediators, from Pakistan's perspective, that if they can get Iran to the table, J.D. Vance, Steve Witkoff, Jared Kushner, when they arrive in Pakistan, if the Iranians can get to the table, then the mediators really feel that there is a deal that can be done. So I think in that context, there's some positivity. In the background, of course, there is diplomacy going on, trying to reach out to the Iranians, trying to convince them to come. Conversations, obviously, between Pakistani and U.S. officials at various different levels. But at the moment, the core issue for the Iranians really is the Strait of Hormuz. There were last week when Pakistan's sort of top negotiator, who was also the most powerful man in the country, Field Marshal Asim Munir, was in Tehran. There was a real sort of series of confidence-building measures going on. You had the ceasefire in Lebanon. You had the Iranians opening up the Strait of Hormuz. They got disappointed when President Trump decided to keep the U.S. closure of the Strait of Hormuz in place. The Iranians fired on ships. The United States overnight fired on, as you were mentioning, on that Iranian tanker. That's sort of given the hardliners in Iran over the past 48 hours a much sort of stronger messaging than they had previously. But the lead negotiator, Ghalibaf, who's the speaker in the Iranian parliament, is still seen as a key interlocutor. If he can and does come to Pakistan, that he can sit at the table and with sort of authority have that serious negotiation across the table. So at the moment, everyone here is waiting for the Iranians to signal they're coming. You know, it could come late tonight. It could come early tomorrow morning. But obviously, if it doesn't come sort of by the middle of the day or early afternoon local time tomorrow, then therefore, what would be the point of J.D. Vance getting on a plane and coming here? So I think that's the sort of time frame we're looking into here. Of course, this city is ready. Security is in place. Hotels are ready, vacated, ready for the two teams to come in. The talks venues all sorted, super secure around there. I was down there in that area today. So it's all set and ready to go. It's waiting on the Iranians. And can they be convinced to come? I think the hope is the answer is yes. But until they sign on, it's still a guess.
Yeah, certainly is. Nick Robertson, thank you for the very latest. Omar?
Let's talk about this more with retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Cedric Layton. So, look, I just want to start with the Strait of Hormuz. It's largely deserted at this point in terms of that main portion. What current threats do ships looking to pass through face here?
Well, Omar, some of the threats include the mines, obviously, the possible mines that the Iranians may have dispersed. But they're also looking at the mine-laying ship craft that are there. The vessels that they use are vessels that have not only speed, but also they're small enough that they actually go outside of the bounds of a lot of what the Navy sees on the U.S. Navy would see on their radars, for example. So they've got these fast boats that the Iranians have. They've got mines. They've got shore batteries that they could potentially use, and they've got missiles. So the Iranians have this panoply of things that they could potentially use against any type of shipping that goes through the Strait of Hormuz. And the way the Iranians have described it, they only want ships to go through the channels that they've approved, not the previously used international channels.
And, you know, as we typically see in wars and conflicts like these, obviously what happens on the battlefield, what happens kinetic-wise, militarily, affects or impacts what happens on the diplomatic side of things in terms of leverage, what's discussed, things like that. And as the U.S. works towards a second round of talks with Iran, has the blockade and the ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon, for example, removed any cards from Iran's negotiating table? How do you see the U.S. actions having impacted what they can offer?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting question, Omar. When you look at the U.S. blockade against Iranian shipping, that blockade is actually a fairly significant development, because what it's doing is it's constraining Iran's freedom of movement and the Iranian ability to not only move their ships, but also to have cargo come in and out of the country. So that affects their ability to gain revenue from oil sales, for example. When it comes to the Lebanon aspect, the idea that there is a ceasefire between the Israelis and Lebanon, that is a positive thing. That's seen as a positive thing also by Iran. So as far as the cards that Iran has, the U.S. blockade has removed at least one card from the Iranian deck. But the ceasefire with Lebanon actually goes in Iran's favor, and it's part of really the mix that Iran wants to achieve in this particular case.
So I want to bring in Ian Bremmer. He's the president and founder of Eurasia Group and G-Zero Media. Thanks for taking the time. Good to see you. Look, usually it's the details of any ceasefire negotiations that are the sticking points, and here we've got Iranian officials saying there are no immediate plans for a second round of talks, yet the latest reporting is Vance is expected to head there for a second round of talks with Pakistan. Is this just posturing? What do you make of this dynamic?
And I pause here to make room for Onkonana Dengue program as my colleague Loise takes over now. And also do stay tuned for the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30. And don't forget the business economic segment with David Chombe from 1800 hours. From Indafa, happy Shisha. It is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful Tuesday afternoon.